Chapter 33. A Question of Crimson. The knife brushed Nynaeve's hair as it thunked into the board she was leaning against, and she flinched behind her blindfold. She wished she had a decent braid instead of locks hanging loose about her shoulders. If that blade had cut even one strand... Fool woman, she thought bitterly. Fool, fool woman. With the scarf folded over her eyes, she could just see a narrow line of light at the bottom. It seemed bright from the darkness behind the thick folds. There had to be enough light yet, even if it was late afternoon. Surely the man would not throw when he could not see properly. The next blade struck on the other side of her head. She could feel it vibrating. She thought it almost touched her ear. She was going to kill Tom Marilyn and Valen Luca, and maybe any other man she could get her hands on sheer principle. "The pears!" Luca shouted, as if he were not just 30 paces from her. He must think the blindfold made her deaf as well as blind. Fumbling in the pouch at her belt, she brought out a pear and carefully balanced it atop her head. She was blind, a pure blind fool. Two more pears, and she gingerly extended her arms to either side between the knives that outlined her, holding one in either hand by the stems. There was a pause. She opened her mouth to tell Tom Marilyn that if he so much as nicked her, she would... Chunk, chunk, chunk. The blades came so fast, she would have yelped if her throat had not contracted like a fist. She held only the stem in her left hand. The other pear trembled faintly with the knife through it, and the pear on her head leaked juice into her hair. Snatching the scarf off, she stalked toward Tom and Luca, both of them grinning like maniacs. Before she could speak one of the words boiling up in her, Luca said admiringly, "You are magnificent, Nana. Your bravery is magnificent, but you are more so." He swirled that ridiculous red silk cloak in a bow, one hand over his heart. "I shall call this Rose Among Thorns, though truly you are more beautiful than any mere rose." "It doesn't take much bravery to stand like a stump." A rose, was she? She would show him thorns. She would show both of them. "You listen to me, Valen Luca. Such courage. You never even flinch. I tell you, I would not have the stomach to do what you are doing." That was the simple truth, she told herself. "I am no braver than I have to be," she said in a milder tone. It was hard to shout at a man who insisted on telling you how brave you were. Certainly better to hear than all that blather about roses. Tom knuckled his long white mustaches as if he saw something funny. "The dress," Luca said, showing all of his teeth in a smile. "You will look wonderful in..." "No!" she snapped. Whatever he had gained, he had just lost by bringing this up again. Clarine had made the dress Luca wanted her to wear, in silk more crimson than his cloak. It was her opinion that the color was to hide blood if Tom's hand slipped. "But Nana... beauty in danger is a great draw," Luca's voice crooned, as if whispering sweetness in her ear. "You will have every eye on you, every heart pounding for your beauty and courage." "If you like it so much," she said firmly, "you wear it." Aside from the color, she was not about to show that much bosom in public, whether or not Clarine thought it was proper. She had seen Latelle's performing dress, all black spangles with a high neck to her chin. She could wear something like... What was she thinking? She had no intention of actually going through with this. She'd only agreed to this practice to stop Luca scratching at the wagon door every night to try convincing her. The man was nothing if not deft at knowing when to change the subject. "What happened here?" he asked, suddenly all smooth solicitude. She flinched as he touched her puffy eye. It was his bad luck to choose that. He would have done better to continue trying to stuff her into that red dress. "I did not like the way it looked at me in the mirror this morning, so I bit it." Her flat tone and bared teeth made Luca snatch his hand back. From the wary gleam in his dark eyes, he suspected she might bite again. Tom was stroking his mustaches furiously, red in the face from the effort of not laughing. He knew what had happened, of course. He would. And as soon as she left, he would no doubt regale Luca with his version of events. Men could not avoid gossiping. It was in them at birth, and nothing women could do ever got it out of them. The daylight was dimmer than she had thought. The sun sat red on the treetops to the west. "If you ever try this again without better light," she growled, shaking a fist at Tom. "It's almost dusk."
"I suppose," the man said, bushy eyebrow lifting, "this means you want to leave out the bit where I am blindfolded?"
He was joking, of course. He had to be joking. "As you wish, Nana. From now on, only in the most perfect light." It was not until she stalked away, swishing her skirts angrily, that she realized that she had agreed to actually do this fool thing, by implication at least. They would try to hold her to it as surely as the sun would set tonight. Fool, fool, fool woman. The clearing where they, or Tom at least, Burn him and Luca both, had been practicing stood some little distance from the camp over beside the road north. Doubtless Luca had not wanted to upset the animals should Tom put one of his knives through her heart. The man would likely have fed her corpse to the lions. The only reason he wanted her to wear that dress was so he could ogle what she had no intention of showing to anyone but Lan, and burn him too for a stubborn fool man. She wished she had him there so she could tell him so. She wished she had him there so she could be sure he was safe. She broke a dead dog fennel and used its feathery brown length like a whip to snap the heads off weeds that poked through the leaves on the ground. Last night, Elaine had said, Egwene reported fighting in Kyrian, skirmishes with brigands, and Kyrianen who saw any Aiel as an enemy, with Andoran soldiers trying to claim the Sun Throne for Morghais. Lan had been involved in them. Whenever Moiraine let him out of her sight, he apparently managed to take himself to the fighting, as if he could sense where it would be. Nynaeve had never thought that she would want the Aes Sedai to keep Lan on a short leash at her side. This morning Elaine had still been disturbed about her mother's soldiers being in Kyrian, fighting Rand's Aiel, but what worried Nynaeve was the brigands. According to Egwene, if anyone could identify stolen property in a brigand's possession, if anyone could swear to seeing him kill anyone or burn so much as a shed, Rand was hanging him. He did not put his hands on the rope, but it was the same thing, and Egwene said he watched every execution with a face cold and hard as the mountains. That was not like him. He had been a gentle boy. Whatever had happened to him in the waste had been very much for the worse. Well, Rand was far away, and her own problems, hers and Elaine's, were no nearer solution. The river Eldar lay less than a mile north, spanned by a single lofty stone bridge built between tall metal pillars that glistened without a speck of rust. Remnants of an earlier time, certainly, perhaps even an earlier age. She had gone up to it at midday, right after they arrived, but there had not been a boat in the river worthy of the name. Rowboats, small fishing boats working along the reed-lined banks, some strange narrow little things that skittered over the water propelled by kneeling men with paddles, even a squat barge that looked to be moored in mud. There seemed to be a lot of mud showing on both sides, some of it dried hard and cracked, yet that was no wonder with the heat holding on so unseasonably, but nothing that could carry them swiftly away down river as she wanted. Not that she knew where it was to take them yet. Rack her brains as she would, she could not remember the name of the town where the Blue Sisters were supposed to be. She swiped savagely at a scatterhead, and it burst in little white feathers that floated to the ground. They probably were not there any more in any case, if they ever had been, but it was the only clue they had to a safe place short of Tyr, if she could only remember it. The only good thing on the entire journey north was that Elaine had stopped flirting with Tom. There had not been an incident since joining the show. At least it would have been good if Elaine had not apparently decided to pretend nothing had ever happened. Yesterday Nynaeve had congratulated the girl on coming to her senses, And Elaine had coolly replied, "Are you trying to find out if I will stand in your way with Tom, Nynaeve? He's rather old for you, and I did think you had planted your affections elsewhere, but you are old enough to make your own decisions. I am fond of Tom, as I think he is of me. I look on him like a second father. If you want to flirt with him, you have my permission, but I really did think you were more constant." Luca meant to cross the river in the morning, and Samara, the town on the other side in Gildan, was no fit place to be. Luca had spent most of the day since their arrival over in Samara securing a place to set up his show. He was only concerned that a number of other menageries had beaten him there, and he was not the only one to have more than animals. That was why he had grown particularly insistent about her letting Tom throw knives at her. She was lucky he did not want it done high-walking with Elaine. The man seemed to think the most important thing in the world was that his show should be bigger and better than any other. For herself, the worrisome thing was that the prophet was in Samara, his followers crowding the town and spilling out into tents, huts, and shanties around it, a city that overwhelmed Samara's own not inconsiderable size. It had a high stone wall, and most of the buildings were stone as well, many as much as three stories, and there were more roofs of slate or tile than thatch. This side of the Eldar was no better. They had passed three white cloak encampments before reaching their stopping place, hundreds of white tents in neat rows, and there had to be more they had not seen. White cloaks on this side of the river, the prophet, and maybe a riot waiting to happen on the other, and she had no idea where to go and no way to get there except in a lumbering wagon that moved no faster than she could walk. She wished she had never let Elaine talk her into abandoning the coach. Not seeing a weed close enough to snap without stepping aside, she broke the dog fennel in half, then again, until the pieces were no longer than her hand, and tossed them to the ground. She wished she could do the same with Luca, and Galad Damodred for sending them running here, and Al-Lan Mandragoran for not being here. Not that she needed him, of course, but his presence would have been a comfort. The camp was quiet, with evening meals cooking over small fires beside the wagons. Petra was feeding the black-maned lion, thrusting huge pieces of meat through the bars on a stick. The female lions were already hunkered down over theirs companionably, letting out an occasional growl if someone came too close to their cage. Nynaeve stopped near Aludra's wagon. The illuminator was working with wooden mortar and pestle on a table let down from the side of her wagon, muttering to herself over what she was compounding. Three of the Chavanas smiled at Nynaeve enticingly, motioning her to join them. Not Brug, who still glowered over his lip, though she had given him a salve to make the swelling go down. Maybe if she hit the rest of them as hard, they would listen to Luca, and more importantly to her, and realize that she did not want their smiles. Too bad Master Valen Luca could not follow his own instructions. Latel turned from the bear cage and gave her a tight smile, more of a smirk, really. Mainly, though, Nynaeve stared at Sarandon, who was filing the blunt toenails of one of the huge gray sredit with what looked like a tool suitable for metal. "That one," Aludra said. "She uses the hands and the feet with remarkable ability, no? Do not glare at me so, Nana," she added, dusting her hands. "I am not your enemy. Here, you must try these new fire sticks." Nynaeve took the wooden box from the dark-haired woman gingerly. It was a cube she could have held easily with one hand, but she used both. "I thought you called them strikers." "Maybe yes, maybe no. Fire sticks, it says what they are much better than strikers, yes? I have smoothed the little holes that hold the sticks, so they can no longer ignite on the wood. A good idea, no? And the heads, they are a new formulation. You will try them and tell me what you think?" "Yes, of course. Thank you." Nynaeve hurried on before the woman could press another box on her. She held the thing as if it might explode, which she was not certain it would not. Aludra had everyone trying out her strikers or fire sticks or whatever she would decide to call them next. They certainly would light a fire or a lamp. They could also burst into flame if the blue-gray heads rubbed against each other or anything else rough. For herself, she would stick with flint and steel, or a coal kept properly banked in a box of sand. Much safer. Julin caught her before she could set foot on the steps of the wagon she shared with Elaine, his gaze going straight to her swollen eye. She glared at him so hard that he stepped back and snatched that ridiculous conical cap from his head.
"I've been over the river," he said. "There are 100 or so white cloaks in Samara, just watching and being watched as hard themselves by Gil'danin soldiers. But I recognized one, the young fellow who was sitting across from the Light of Truth in Sienda."
She smiled at him, and he took another hasty step back, eyeing her warily. Galad in Samara. That was all they needed. "You always bring such wonderful news, Julin. We should have left you in Tanchico, or better, on the dock in Tyr." That was hardly fair. Better he told her of Galad than that she walked around a corner into the man. "Thank you, Julin. At least we know to keep an eye out for him now." His nod was hardly a proper response to graciously offered thanks, and he hurried away, clapping his hat on, as if he expected her to hit him. Men had no manners. The interior of the wagon was far cleaner than it had been when Tom and Julin purchased it. The flaking paint had all been scraped off, the men had grumbled about doing that, and the cabinets and the tiny table that was fastened to the floor oiled until they shone. The small brick stove with its metal chimney was never used. The nights were warm enough, and if they began cooking in here, Tom and Julin would never take another turn. But it made a good place to keep their valuables, the purses and the jewelry boxes. The wash leather pouch holding the seal, that she had stuffed in as far as it would go and had not touched since. Elaine, seated on one of the narrow beds, stuffed something under the blankets when Nynaeve climbed inside, but before she could ask what it was, Elaine exclaimed, "Your eye! What happened to you?" They needed to wash her hair in hen pepper again. Faint hints of gold were showing at the roots of those black tresses. It had to be done every few days. "Sarandon hit me when I wasn't looking," Nynaeve muttered. The remembered taste of boiled catfern and powdered maven's leaf made her tongue curl. That was not why she had let Elaine go to the last meeting in Tel Iron Riad, too. She was not avoiding Egwene. It was just that she made most of the journeys into the world of dreams between meetings, and it was only fair to give Elaine her chances to go. That was it. Carefully, she put the box of fire sticks into one of the cabinets, next to two more. The one that had actually caught fire was long since discarded. She did not know why she was hiding the truth. Elaine had obviously not been outside the wagon, or she would know already. She and Julin were probably the only people in camp who did not know, now that Tom had surely revealed every disgusting detail to Luca. Taking a deep breath, she sat down on the other bed and made herself meet Elaine's eyes. Something in the quiet of the other woman said she knew that more was coming. "I asked Sarandon about Damani and Suldam. I'm certain she knows more than she lets on." She paused for Elaine to voice doubts that she had asked rather than demanded, to say that the Shan Chan woman had already told them all she knew, that she had not had much contact with Damani or Suldam. But Elaine kept silent, and Nynaeve realized that she was only hoping to postpone the moment with an argument. She got quite heated about not knowing any more, so I shook her. "You've really gone too far with her. She waggled her finger under my nose." Still, Elaine only watched her, those cool blue eyes barely blinking. It was all Nynaeve could do not to look away as she went on. "She threw me, somehow, over her shoulder. I got up and slapped her, and she knocked me down with her fist. That is how I got the eye." She might as well tell the rest. Elaine would hear soon enough. Better it came from her. She would rather have pulled out her tongue. "I wasn't about to put up with that, certainly. We scuffled a little more." Not much of a scuffle on her part, for all that she had refused to quit. The bitterest truth was that Sarandon had only stopped flipping her about and tripping her in sneaky ways because it had been like manhandling a child. Nynaeve had had as much chance as that child, if only no one had been watching, so she could have channeled. She had certainly been angry enough. If only no one had been watching, period. She wished Sarandon had pounded her with her fists until she bled. Then Latell gave her a stick. You know how that woman wants to get back at me. There was certainly no need to say that Sarandon had been holding her head down over a wagon tongue at the time. No one had manhandled her like that since she threw a pitcher of water at Nyssa Aiellyn when she was 16. Anyway, Petra broke it up. Just in time, too. The huge man had taken the pair of them by the scruff of the neck like kittens. Sarandon apologized, and that was that. Petra had made the Shan Chan woman apologize, true, but he had made Nynaeve do so as well, refusing to loose that gentle yet iron-hard grip on her neck until she did. She had hit him as hard as she could, right in the stomach, and he had not even blinked. Her hand felt as if it might swell, too. Nothing much to it, really. I suppose Latell will try to spread some story of her own making about it. That is the woman I ought to shake. I didn't hit her half hard enough. She felt better for telling the truth, but Elaine had doubt on her face that made her want to change the subject. What is that you're hiding? She reached over and pulled the blanket back, revealing the silvery length of the eidom they had gotten from Sarandon. Why under the light do you want to look at that? And if you do, why hide it? It is a filthy thing, and I cannot understand how you can touch it, but if you want to, that is entirely up to you.
Don't sound so prim, Elaine told her. A slow smile broke across her face, a flush of excitement. I think I could make one.
Make one? Nynaeve lowered her voice, hoping no one came running to see who was killing whom, but she did not soften it any.
Light, why? Make an open cesspit first, a midden heap. At least there's some decent use for those.
I do not mean to actually make an eidom. Elaine held herself erect, chin tilted in that cool way of hers. She sounded offended and icily calm. But it is a Terangrial, and I have puzzled out how it works. I saw you attend at least one lecture on linking. The eidom links the two women. That is why the Suldam must be a woman who can channel too. She frowned slightly. It is a strange link, though. Different. Instead of two or more sharing, with one guiding, it is one taking full control, really. I think that is the reason a Damani cannot do anything the Suldam doesn't want her to. I don't really believe there is any need for the leash. The collar and bracelet would work as well without it, and in just the same ways.
Work as well, Nynaeve said dryly. You've studied the matter a great deal for someone who has no intention of making one.
The woman did not even have the grace to blush. What use would you put it to? I cannot say I would take it amiss if you put one around Elida's neck, but that doesn't make it any less disgust.
Don't you understand? Elaine broke in, haughtiness all gone in excitement and fervor.
She leaned forward to put a hand on Nynaeve's knee, and her eyes shone, she was so delighted with herself.
It is a Terangrial, Nynaeve. And I think I can make one.
She said each word slowly and deliberately, then laughed and rushed on.
If I can make this one, I can make others. Maybe I can even make Angrial and Saangrial. No one in the tower has been able to do that in thousands of years.
Straightening, she shivered and laid fingers across her mouth.
I never really thought of making anything myself before. Not anything useful. I remember seeing a craftsman once, a man who had made some chairs for the palace. They were not gilded or elaborately carved. They were meant for the servants' hall, but I could see the pride in his eyes. Pride in what he had made, a thing well crafted. I would love to feel that, I think. Oh, if we only knew a fraction of what the Forsaken do. The knowledge of the Age of Legends inside their heads, and they use it to serve the shadow. Think what we could do with it. Think what we could make.
She took a deep breath, dropping her hands in her lap, her enthusiasm barely diminished.
"Well, be that as it may, I'll wager I could puzzle out how Whitebridge was made, too. Buildings like spun glass but stronger than steel, and Quendilar and—"
"Slow down," Nynaeve said. "Whitebridge is 500 or 600 miles from here at least, and if you think you're going to go channeling at the seal, you can think again. Who knows what could happen? It stays in its pouch in the stove until we find somewhere safe for it."
Elaine's eagerness was very odd.
Nynaeve would not have minded a little of the Forsaken's knowledge herself, far from it. But if she wanted a chair, she paid a carpenter. She'd never wanted to make anything aside from poultices and salves. When she was 12, her mother had stopped going through the motions of teaching her to sew after it became apparent that she did not care whether she sewed a straight seam, and could not be made to care. As for cooking, she thought she was a good cook, actually, but the point was that she knew what was significant. Healing was important. Any man could build a bridge, and leave him to it, was what she said. "With you and your eye, Dom," she went on, "I nearly forgot to tell you. Juelin saw Galad on the other side of the river."
"Blood and bloody ashes,"
Elaine muttered, and when Nynaeve raised her eyebrows, she added very firmly, "I will not listen to a lecture on my language, Nynaeve. What are we going to do?"
"As I see it, we can remain on this side of the river and have white cloaks looking us over, wondering why we left the menagerie, or we can cross the bridge and hope the prophet doesn't spark a riot, and Galad doesn't denounce us, or we can try to buy a rowboat and flee downriver. Not very good choices. And Luca will want his 100 marks. Gold."
She tried not to scowl, but that still rankled. "You promised it to him, and I suppose it would not be honest to sneak away without paying him. She would have done it in a minute if there was anywhere to go."
"It certainly would not be," Elaine said, sounding shocked.
"But we do not have to worry about Galad, at least not as long as we stay close to the menagerie. Galad won't go near one. He thinks putting animals in cages is cruel. He doesn't mind hunting them, mind, or eating them, only caging them."
Nynaeve shook her head. The truth was that Elaine would have found some way to delay, if only for one day, had there been any way to leave. The woman really wanted to highwalk in front of people other than the rest of the performers, and she herself was probably going to have to let Tom throw knives at her again. "I am not wearing that bloody dress, though."
"The first boat that comes large enough to take 4 people," she said. "We are hiring it. Trade on the river can't have stopped altogether."
"It would help if we knew where we were going."
The other woman's tone was much too gentle.
"We could simply head for Tyr, you know. We do not have to stay fixed to this just because you—"
She trailed off, but Nynaeve knew what she had been going to say. Just because she was stubborn. Just because she was so furious that she could not remember a simple name that she intended to remember it and go there if it killed her. Well, none of that was true. She intended to find these Aes Sedai who might just support Rand and bring them to him, not trail into Tyr like a pitiful refugee fleeing for safety.
"I will remember," she said in a level tone.
It ended with Bar. Or was it Dar? Lar?
"Before you are tired of flaunting yourself high-walking, I will."
"I will not wear that dress."